We're holding the last words of David on the Beis. We said in the Mishnah, Misaknes Kokule Amayim Shabosh Sarabim Mechula. We said that if you have a water channel or a water pit or something in Rosh Hasharabim, which has gotten damaged, for example, you have, let's say, stones fell into it, then you're allowed to clear them out. You're allowed to fix those and clear them out on Chol HaMoed. And the Mishnah had also mentioned the Chotit Denoisan, but the Mishnah had also said you're allowed to Chotit them, where Chotit means basically to clear them out. So again, like you have mud or whatever in them, then you're allowed to clear that out. So the implication, the Gemara says, Chotit Ein Chafir Aloy. So the implication is that you're allowed to do chotitin, you're allowed to clean them out, but you're not allowed to dig such a well or something in the first place on Chol HaMoed. So Amar of Yaakov, Amar of Yechanan, Lo Shano Ela She'en Rabim Tzrichin Lahem. Now that would only apply if the Rabim don't need them. Avol Rabim Tzrichin Lahem, but if the Rabim need that water supply, Afilu Chafiro Mutter, then it would be allowed even to dig them. What do we mean by then we need them? So the Ritva quotes from Rashi and Tosfos over here, which we don't seem to have it in Rashi and in Tosfos in front of us. But anyway, that Rashi says that the Ritva quotes that Rashi says it means that the people Poshut don't have water to drink. Tosfos says it does. They do. We mean that they're going to be using it even after Chol HaMoed. Usually we would say, you know, do malacha on Chol HaMoed for after Chol HaMoed. But here, because of Tzorchei Rabim, then it would be mutter. And the Ritva himself talks about that maybe what we mean is that Ein Rabim Tzrichin Lahem would be that there is enough water, it's just not flowing smoothly and in you know the way that it should, and therefore like you have people have to crowd together in places in order to get it, whereas then you're cleaning it out in order that it'll flow more clearly, more cleanly, and then like people won't have to crowd around in one place to get water, they'll be able to get from around many different places or many different around the banks of it. Okay. So the Gemara says, "V'chi rabim tzrichin lahem mishori." So you're telling me that if the rabim need this water pit or water channel or whatever, then you're allowed to dig it on Chol HaMoed. Well, Tanya, we learn in a brisa, "Chotitin boris shichin u'ma'oris shayokid." You're allowed to clean out boris shichin u'ma'oris that belong to an individual person. Boris are round ones. Shichin are square or rectangular ones, water pits. Ma'oris are ones that have a cover. The Tiferet Yisrael and some other places explain that round ones people would use mainly for drinking water. The square or rectangular ones people would use mostly for washing clothes because it's more convenient since it's got straight sides, more people can stand by the side of it and do their laundry at the same time. And ma'oris would be ones that are mainly used for tevila. Anyway, so the Braisa says you're allowed to clean out ones that belong to a yachid. The Ein Tzarech Lo Mashal Rabim. Needless to say, you're allowed to do that on Chol HaMoed to clean out ones that belong to Rabim. On the other hand, the Ein Chokrin Boreth Shichin Ma'oris Shal Rabim. On the other hand, you're not allowed to dig for the first time Boreth or Shichin Ma'oris even of Rabim. The Ein Tzarech Lo Mashal Yachid. Needless to say, you can't dig ones belonging to a yachid on Chol HaMoed. So, my lab, when we say that you're not allowed to do ones of Rabim, my lab, the Shadabim, Tzrichim Lahem. On the face of it, aren't we talking about where the Rabim need those water pits or whatever, and we're still saying that you're only allowed to clean them out on Chol HaMoed if they already exist, to clean out the mud and then rocks and whatever, but not to dig them in the first place. Gemara says, Loi b'she'en Rabim, Tzrichim Lahem. Not necessarily. It could be we're talking about ones that belong to the Rabim, but we're talking about the situation where the Rabim don't need them right now. So according to Rashi, as the Ritva quotes it, it would mean they have plenty of other water to drink. According to Tosfos, it might mean that they're not planning specifically to use it after Chol HaMoed. They just want it like as a reserve or something. Okay, the Gemara says, D'kavasal gaba yachid. Well, then the parallel, let's look at the Braisa as comparing and contrasting ones of Yochid and ones of Rabim. So the parallel by a Yochid would be She'en Yochid Tzarech Lahem, would be the Yochid doesn't need them on Chol HaMoed. Well then, Chatita Mishori. Well, if we're talking about something that the Yochid himself doesn't even need on Chol HaMoed, then why would he even be allowed to clean them out? V'hatanya, don't we learn in a Braisa, in another Braisa, Boris Shichin Ma'oris Shal Yochid, when you have these various kinds of water pits that belong to an individual, you're allowed to collect water into them, which would mean, for example, let's say the common way of doing it, when you had a Boris Shichin Ma'oris, a common way, a popular way of filling them would be, for example, you'd have a roof nearby where the gutter from the river, when water lands on the roof over there, then it would drain into a gutter, and then the gutter in turn would drain into the Bar Shiachamara. So you're allowed to do that kind of thing to direct the water into the Bar Shiachamara on Chol HaMoed, even though it's of a yachid. And the Braisa continues, son, you're allowed to clean out the water pit of the mud or whatever. Aval, but you're not allowed on Chol HaMoed when you have a burish or yachid to smooth out the cracks in it. Well, you have as time goes on, the walls of it develop cracks and the water is going to start leaking out. So you'd want to smooth out those cracks. So you're not allowed to do that on Chol HaMoed. And the Braisa continues, b'shar rabim, but I skipped to a different price, actually. You are allowed to collect water in them. You're allowed to direct the water for the runoff from the roofs, for example, to go into the Bar Shiachamara. I was reading from a different part of the Gemara. But you're not allowed to clean them out on Chol HaMoed. V'loy shofenes tzidkehen, you're also not allowed to smooth out the cracks of them. V'shal rabim, chotet tinoson, but pits that belong to rabim, chotet tinoson, you are allowed to clean them out on Chol HaMoed. V'shofenes tzidkehen, you are allowed to smooth out the cracks on them. So therefore, so now this braisa that says that ones of a yachid, you're not allowed to do chatita either, the pashtus is talking about, where the yachid doesn't need it on Chol HaMoed. So then we have the previous braisa that had said chotetin. This one says that in chotetin, loy chotetin. The pashtus, what would be the difference? The previous braisa is talking about where you need it on Chol HaMoed, and therefore it's tzarech HaMoed, and the other one is talking about where you don't need it on the Moed. Well, if we understand it that way, then by the rabim, it would have to be the same kind of thing. So how can you tell me that the previous braisa had said that when it comes to the rabim, you're allowed to clean them out. You're just not allowed to dig new ones because we're talking about where you don't need them for Chol HaMoed. If that's the case, then the braisa doesn't fit. Again, our Mishnah had said you're only allowed to do chotetin, even by Rosh Hashanah, even by rabim. Rabbi Yaakov was telling us that if the rabbim need them, then you're allowed to dig them. But we have a braisa that's saying that you're not allowed to dig ones of rabbim. If you're talking about where they don't need it, then that braisa wouldn't also say, on the other hand, that you're allowed to do chotetin of a yochid, where you're not allowed to do that either when it's not necessary for Chol HaMoed. So the Gemara says, ve'elamai v'shiyochid tzorech lahem. So then, let's revisit. Are we talking about that we're saying that the braisa that says that you're allowed to do chotetin for yochid is talking about where yochid needs them, and therefore you're allowed to clean them out on Chol HaMoed? Well, the kavasag gav rabim b'shirabim tzirchem lahem. Well, then the parallel by rabim would have to be where the rabim do need it on Chol HaMoed itself. Well, then b'shirabim tzirchem lahem chafiro mi osir. In that case, is it also to dig them out to begin with? Well, Hatanya, we have the braisa that's one of the braisas that we quoted before, or a variation of one of those braisas. Boris shirchem aras shoyachid. Kuntin Mayim L'Soicham, another braisa, yeah, there's a different braisa, says that a yochid Bar Shiachamara, you're allowed to collect water into it, v'chotetinoisan, and this braisa is saying you are even allowed to dig them out, avaloi shofenes tzidkehen, but you're not allowed to smooth out the cracks in them, v'loi chotetin L'Soicham, and you're not allowed to clean out L'Soicham. Now, what's the difference between chotetin oisan or chotetin l'soichan? So there are, in fact, girsos that don't have that distinction at all, in which case, then there's nothing to explain. However, according to the girsa that we have in front of us that has oisan versus l'soichan, then the Lacha Mishnah explains chotetin oisan would just mean like a superficial cleaning out. Chotetin l'soichan would be like a deeper cleaning. Literally, l'soichan means into them. So it would mean, for example, not only cleaning out the mud in them, but also making them deeper or something. So you'd be allowed to do the first kind, which is like a more low level cleaning kind of to just clean out the dirt and make it usable again. Whereas you wouldn't be allowed to do the stronger kind of chotetin, which is l'soichan, when you're actually digging and making the pit deeper or whatever. And the Braita continues, the loy sodin osan basid, also a bur shiachim ora of an individual that belongs to an individual, on chalamoyed, you're not allowed to plaster the sides of the pit with plaster. In those days, when they had a water pit, so if you just have a water pit in the ground, then after a while, the water is gonna leak out because the ground absorbs. So instead, what you would do is you would smear the sides of the pit with plaster or lime, and that would make it waterproof. So on Chalamoyed, we're saying you're not allowed to do that with a Bosh Yachim Ora of Yachim. On the other hand, B'shar Rabim, Chofer Nosan, but a pit that belongs to Rabim, you are allowed to dig it out, to even dig a new one on Chalamoyed, V'sadden Nosan V'sidden, you are allowed to plaster them on Chalamoyed. So therefore, so we see from this last Braisa that there is a case of Rabim where you're allowed to actually dig them on Yom Tov, on Chalamoyed rather. Obviously, that has to be talking about where Rabim need them, otherwise on Chalamoyed, otherwise there'd be no reason that would be mutter. So then, in that case, by a Yachid, so then our Braisa, the last one we just quoted, says you are allowed to be Chotetin ones of a Yachid on Chalamoyed. You're maybe not allowed to do a more deep cleaning, a Chotetin L'Soichan, but you're allowed to do Chotetin plain. So then we have, but we had a different braisa that said loy chotetin. So what is it? So what's the story? When are we saying you're allowed to dig for a rabim, and when not? So elakasha ha kamaisa. So the question is the first braisa that we quoted, where we said that you're not allowed to dig ones of rabim. We said the first braisa at the top of the Amud that said chotkin boris shikhanim aras shayachid the ein sarach lemeshar rabim the ein chotkin boris shikhanim aras shayachid the ein sarach lemeshar yachid. So that braisa clearly said you're not allowed to dig boris shikhanim aras for rabim, but now we have the last braisa says that you are allowed to. So what is it? So they said the question was on the first braisa. So tritochi. So the answer is let's look at that first braisa. And let's revisit it and let's explain what it's talking about. It means like this: chotzin berus shel yochid. When it says that you're allowed to clean out a pit that belongs to a yochid, what we mean is b'shel yochid sarach lahem. We're talking about where the yochid needs that water pit on chalamoyed, whether because he doesn't have any water to drink at all, or he doesn't have water for his various other needs, or whatever it is exactly. So then he's allowed to clean it out even on Chalamoyed. The Ein Sarachloim B'Shal Rabim B'Shal Rabim Tzirchim Lahem. Needless to say that if the Rabim have a Bor Shiachim Ora that is full of mud and they need to clean it out, then they're allowed to do that on Chalamoyed. And the point would be the Braisa is implying that when Rabim Tzirchim Lahem Da'afilu Chafira Mutter, in that case you should know actually not only Chatzita that's Mutter, for Rabim you'd even be allowed to dig. To dig new ones to begin with. The ein chopin boris shichanim aris shorabim the she'en rabim tzrichim lahem. On the other hand, to dig new ones of rabim when the rabim do not need them, that you wouldn't be allowed to do. The ein sarach loy mesho yachid. Needless to say, you wouldn't be allowed to dig new ones of a yachid where he doesn't need it in chalamoyed. And the implication would be the key ein yachid sarach lahem. In fact, if the yachid doesn't need them, afilu chatita nami oser, then even to clean them out on chalamoyed would also be oser because you're doing tircha for no reason. So the bottom line then would be that we have three different factors to consider: chatita versus chafira, yachid versus rabim, and needs them on chalamoyed versus doesn't need them on chalamoyed. Right now, then, what we're saying is that for yochid for Yochid, if he needs it on Chalamoyed, then he's allowed to do Chatita, but he's allowed to clean them out, but not Chafira. He wouldn't be allowed to dig them. If he doesn't need them for Chalamoyed, then he's also either one. For Rabim, if they need it on Chalamoyed, they're even allowed to dig a new one. If they don't need them for Chalamoyed, then they're allowed to do Chatita, but they're not allowed to do Chafira. They're not allowed to dig a new one. So in that way, we can reconcile all the braises that we quoted, and it still also fits with what Rabbi Yaakov said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan at the top of the Amud, that if the rabbim need them, then you're allowed to dig out even a new one on Chalamoyed. Okay, Omer of Ashi, so Rav Ashi says in this connection, Masnisin Nami Deka, as a matter of fact, we don't even need to derive this from the various braises that we quoted. We can see that actually from the wording of the Mishnah. Dikotani, Oisin Kol Tzorche Rabim. The Mishnah had said you're allowed to do all the Tzorche Rabim. Now, Kol La'asui Mai, what would that word Kol be coming to include? Lav La'asui Chafira. Wouldn't it be coming to include also that you're allowed to dig new Boris Shichin Ma'aris on Chalamoyed? So we don't even need the braises. We would see it just from the fact that the Mishnah uses the word kol. And the answer is loy, not necessarily. Rather, we can say that the word kol in the Mishnah is including some other activities that it mentions in a braise. Where the braise says, yotzen l'kavetz tzadzirachim, you're allowed to go out on Chalamoyed to remove thorns and splinters from the road so that people can use the road safely, or the sakana sarachoivas. You're also allowed to, they can also fix the streets, or the city squares, the esa isterotos, and the isterotos, which are larger streets. On the side here, it says Pirish Drachman Poloshin. It means streets that are open at both ends, different cities, so like highways or roads between cities. You're allowed to fix those on Chalamoyed. The Lomud Esamikvars, they're also allowed on Chalamoyed to go and measure mikvars. The Chom Mikvah She'in Vaya Boim Sa, and if they find that any mikvah, and if they find that any mikvah doesn't have 40 Sa, Magilim Lasecha Boim Sa, then they can direct water into it to fill it up with 40 Sa. So Rashi says, for example, that you have, let's say, a water channel nearby, so you divert that channel so that some of the water will go into the mikveh and bring it back up to 40 out, so it's just a 40 sah. And the braisa continues, by the way, uminayin shim lo yotzu v'osu kol elu. Now, how do we know that if Basin does not go and take care of all these things, and they leave the road to have thorns on it, for example, how do we know that if they don't do that, that any blood that gets shed on those places, which can mean, for example, that people are traveling on the road and they get injured, or it can mean, for example, that they're trying to use the road to escape from enemies and they're not able to because the roads aren't in good condition or whatever. So how do we know then that any blood that was spilled there, mala alei makosa fila heim shopchum, then the posset considers it as if the local bastion are the ones who spilled that blood, because they should have kept the roads in good order. Talmud Lomar v'hoya alecha damim. Therefore, the pasuk says, there will be blood, meaning the guilt of blood, upon you. The context of the pasuk is talking about that you have to make sure to have Orei Miklat, and as we know, the roads to the Orei Miklat had to be wide, and they had to be kept in good condition, etc., etc. So the same thing, we're talking about not only Orei Miklat, we're saying that, we're saying by the same token, that in general the roads have to be kept in good condition, and that way people will be able to use them without getting injured on the road as they walk along, or they'll be able to use it in a hurry to escape from their enemies or whatever. So we see that they're responsible to do these things on Chalamoyed. So fine, maybe when it says in the Mishnah Kol Tzorchei Rabim, then it includes those kinds of activities. Not necessarily does it include digging new wells like we were talking about before. So Rav Ashi's proof from the Mishnah is not, as the Gemara is saying, is not necessarily valid. which, by the way, Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hananel, that actually the pasuk that the Gemara is quoting is not one in connection with, is not the one in connection with the Orei Mikvot that we were saying, but rather a different one where the Torah tells us you have to have a mica, you have to have a guardrail around your roof so people don't fall off it. And there the Torah also says that, if you don't, well, the pasuk doesn't actually say the words V'hoya Alech Adamim, but it says in a, similar vein. It says, you shouldn't put guilt of blood in your house. So therefore, so the Rabbeinu Hananel learns that that's the pasuk the Gemara is quoting, which is very similar. Therefore, there you're saying you need a guardrail around your roof so people don't fall off it. By the same token, we're saying over here that you have to make sure that the roads are kept smooth and free of obstacles. Anyway, so the point is, the Mishnah is, when the Mishnah says that you're allowed to do kol tzorchei rabim, it may be including those kinds of things. Not necessarily is it including digging water pits, which is a separate thing, to provide the people with a water supply. That's a very nice thing, but maybe that's not what we're including in tzorchei rabim. But the Gemara says, no, b'habahed yekatoni lo. No, because the Mishnah clearly says, the Mishnah clearly mentions those things. Or Mesafnan es adrochim, the Mishnah mentioned that on Chalamoyed, that they can fix the roads, the Eserachoyvus, and the city squares, the Esamikvois, and the Mikvois, as we said, if a mikvah is lacking 40 sar, then they arrange to get it refilled. So therefore, the Oisin called Tzorchei Rabim la'asu yimai. So what would this Oisin called Tzorchei Rabim come to include? Lav la'asu yichafira. Of necessity, it has to include digging new wells because everything else has already been covered. So first, in other words, now, obviously we knew before the Mishnah that Amiroyim know all the Mishnayos. So Tosfos says that, okay, originally the Makshin thought that Mesafman, as a Rechoivus, would mean, for example, that they make sure that they're smooth, that you don't have potholes or piles of dirt in them in different places. But no, the answer is that no, Mesafman itself includes all those things, and therefore Kol Tzorchei Tzibur has to include digging wells. Another possibility, Tosfos says, is the Makshin maybe didn't know, even though the Amoraim always knew the Mishnayos, maybe he didn't know the Mishnah fully, and he didn't know that the Mishnah has the words Mesafman es Adrochim. So therefore that proves, ultimately, we can yet say that, yes, Rav Ashi's proof from the word Ba'osin called Tzorchei Rabim is correct, because everything else, all the other possible Tzorchei Rabim that we could talk about, have already been addressed. And therefore, it has to be that we're talking about now not just fixing the roads so that people can travel safely, but also providing water supplies so people and their animals can drink, and that's included in Tzorchei Rabim, and we're saying that they can do that on Kalamoyed as well. So now before we leave this point about what we're allowed to do as far as water supplies, Tosfos mentions that in this connection, when we've been saying off and on the last couple of blocks, we've been talking about what you're allowed to do as far as watering fields. So Tosfos says only when it's a davar ha'avod, only when, if you don't water it, then the field or the trees are going to dry out of there. The same kind of thing. Other agricultural work is generally usur on Chalamoyed. When is it mutter? Only, we said, when you have an amas hamayim, when you have a water channel in the field itself, where there's not much to it. But otherwise, so Tosfos is saying that there's two conditions that you need in order to be able to water a field on Chalamoyed. One is that it's davar avod, where there, like we said in the first Mishnah, like we said in the Mishnah, a beis hashochen, a field which is dry, and if you don't water it, then everything is going to get ruined. And number two, that it has to be that there's no tircha yisera, where there's not much trouble involved in doing it because you have a water channel right there. Continues the Gemara. We said in the Mishnah Mitzainin es HaKvaris, another thing that they were allowed to do on Chalamoyed is to mark graves. So what they would do is they would take a place where there's a grave, or as the Gemara is going to discuss now, where there's not a full grave, because people know about that, but rather we're talking about like places where there's individual bits of human remains or whatever, then they would mark them with plaster. Why plaster? Rashi brings from Gemara and Bava Kama, because plaster is white, bones are also white. So therefore, that would create a mental association by people that when they see white plaster, then they know it means that this is a place where there's tumor, and they would know to stay away from it. So we said you're allowed to do that on Chol HaMoed. And there's really two reasons. Number one, there's not much tircha involved. And number two, it's again, it's an example of tzorchei rabim. We're doing it so that people who have to stay tohar to eat truma or whatever are not going to accidentally go there and become tameh and make the truma that they're carrying tameh. So, Amar of Shimon ben Pazi, remez l'tziyun kvoris minat torah minayin. Where is there a hint in the Torah for the concept of marking graves? Now, why should we need a remez min haTorah at all? So the Ritzvah brings, first he says that there are people who want to explain that the reason is, otherwise you wouldn't be allowed to do it on Chol HaMoed. The Ritzvah says nothing doing, that's not the reason. Even if there's no posit for it, you'd be allowed to do it on Chol HaMoed, because it's Tzorchei Rabim. Rather, the Gemara's question is, such a basic idea, that you have a place where there's tumah and you're going to mark it so people who need to be tahor shouldn't go over it. There must be, for such an obvious thing, there must be a source, from such an important thing to do, there must be a source in the Torah for it. It can't just be something that the Chachamim themselves came up with. So where is there a source for it? So Talmud Lomar, you have a pasuk in Yechezkel, v'ra etzem adam uvana etzleitziyum. Yechezkel is describing over there Mechamas Gogomogog. We read it as the Torah of Shabbos Chol HaMoed Sukkos. So he describes there how you're going to have the huge army of Gogomogog is going to be destroyed and defeated and killed in Eretz Yisrael. Afterwards, there's going to be many bodies all over the place. So the pasuk describes how they're going to set aside a place in Eretz Yisrael to bury all of them. And then the pasuk describes after that, from then on, if a person is walking along and he finds a human bone, then he should build a marker next to it, and eventually the people in charge of these things will come and take the bone and bury it together with all the other ones that are supposed to be over there in the area where the people of Gog and Magog are buried. The point being that we see that when you see a bone which is going to cause tumor, then you're supposed to mark it. So we see a source in a pasuk for this concept of marking areas of tumor. So the Gemara says, Amalei Rabbeinu L'Ravashi. Okay, but if Yechezkel will stay in the pasuk, Yechezkel is almost 1,000 years after Matan Torah. So who said this before Yechezkel came along? We shouldn't assume again that it's something that Yechezkel came up with on his own. So Rav Ashi answers him, according to your svara that you're even asking the question, what about, you can ask something else, where you have a halacha that we learn from a pasuk in Yechezkel. Namely, Hada Amar Rav Chisda, we find that a halacha that Rav Chisda said, we learned this most recently in Tainus, Dabar Zemitotas Moshe Rabbeinu Lo Lamanu, there's the following din, which we don't have a pasuk for it in Chumash, from the Torah that Hashem dictated to Moshe and Moshe told to us, but midivrei Yechezkel ben Buzi Labmanu, but we learn this halacha from a pasuk in Yechezkel, where the pasuk says, Kol ben Necher, any ben Necher means a person who's been estranged from Hashem. So we're talking about, in other words, a person who, a mummer, a person who's abandoned Yiddishkeit, Rahman al-Flan, or who's abandoned certain mitzvahs in it, or whatever. So such a person, Erel Lev, where he has an uncircumcised, stocked up heart. In other words, the idea is a person's heart has to be open and receptive to Torah and to Yiddishkeit, and this person is not. His heart is closed and stocked up, and he thinks that Yiddishkeit has nothing to do with him. Or the Erel Bosser, or a person who's closed up of flesh, meaning that he doesn't have a bris mila. So Rashi over here, and in many other places in Shas, means we're not even talking about a person who refuses to get a bris mila where he could. We're talking about a person who, because of health reasons, can't have a bris mila. For example, his brothers previously had a bris mila, and then they died from it because of loss of blood or whatever. So now the halacha is we don't do a bris mila for him unless we know that he's strong enough to be able to survive it. So nevertheless, so you'd think, so he's not doing anything wrong. He's not getting a bris mila because he can't. Nevertheless, the pasuk is saying that he's considered an erel baser, and he's not allowed to serve in the bris mikdash. Tosfos in some other places in Shas, it says that no, not necessarily. If he does that, maybe actually he would be considered oinus and he would be allowed to. Rather, Tosfos says, we're talking about where he doesn't want to have a bris mila because he's afraid of the pain, for example. So Erel Lev would be where he refuses to have a bris milah because he doesn't want to do the mitzvah. Erev Moshe would be he doesn't want to do it, not because he can't, but because he's afraid of the pain. Anyway, whatever the case, the point is the pasuk says either of these kinds, the erev lev or the erev Moshe, lo yavei amikdashi, is not allowed to come into the Beis HaMikdash, into my Beis HaMikdash. The word Lashor Seni is not actually in the Pasuk over there, but that's what it means. In other words, that a Kohen who has either of these things is not allowed to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. So, Rav Ashi says to Ravina, Nu, you could ask the same question. Nikame de Leisi Yechezkel Man Omar, who said this before Yechezkel came along? Obviously, Yechezkel can't make up new halachas himself. Ella, we have to answer, Gemara Gemirila, they had this din the Kabbalah going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, it was part of Torah Shabbat there, but also Yechezkel, V'as Mechakra. So now, when Yechezkel comes, and he writes it down in a pasuk, from now on, we're able to quote the pasuk for this din, but really the din itself existed long before Yechezkel, all the way from when Hashem gave it to Moshe. Hachanami, well, you could say the same thing also. You're asking about this matter of tzion kvaros, of marking graves, that why is our first source for a pasuk in Yechezkel, 900 years after the Torah was given? What about until then? So you could answer the same thing. Hachanami, Gemara Gemirila, they had the Kabbalah, that's what it is, that you're supposed to mark graves, but also Yechezkel, v'ach machakra, and Yechezkel came and supported it by giving a pasuk for it. But the actual concept existed long before Yechezkel. Okay, so that's one source in Torah for this concept of tziun kvaros, of marking places of tumah, places of graves. So now the Gemara brings a bunch of other ones. Rabbi Bohu says, I have a pasuk in Chumash that expresses this idea. The pasuk says, the tomei yikra. Literally it means that the Mitzvah has to be outside of the Machna, has to be outside of the walled cities, and he has to call out Tomei Tomei, but also it means Tuma, the word Tomei, Tomei Yikra, can be understood, the Tomei, the thing, or the person that is Tomei, calls out Tomei, meaning Tuma Kodesloi. You need that, you need that the Tumah itself has to be calling out to the person, but in Menace, like Prush, I'm telling him stay away. So how do you do that? You make a simon on it, and that way the person realizes that there's a simon, and he knows to stay away. The Gemara says, V'chein Omer, Rabu Zil, Ba'bred, Rabu Zil, the grandson of Rabu Zil Rabba, said the same thing, that the word V'tomei Tomei Yikra means Tumah Kodaloi V'Emeris like Prush. Means that the Tumah called out to him and tells him stay away. So that requires us to mark it in order that people should realize that. So the Gemara says, "V'hai lahoch Yehuda Asa." You're telling me that that pasuk, the Tomei Tomei Yitra, is coming to teach us that concept. Ahumi boila the Chedetanya. We need that pasuk for what we learn in a different brayse. When it says the Tomei Tomei Yitra, when it says the Tomei should call out Tomei, means Sorech Loydia Tzar L'Rabim, means that the Mitzora has to call out and inform people of the Tzar that he's having, that he's stricken with Tzaras. And the Rabbim that way will daven for Rachmanas, for Hashem from him. So we learn that from this pasuk, the Tomei Tomei Yitra. So you can't use it to also say that it means that you should mark a grave. So the Gemara says, no, in Cain, if that's all it meant, lichtiv v'tomei yikra, then it could just said, the Tomei calls out. And we'd understand, that's what it means. He calls out to people, he tells them, you should know I have tzaras, and then that way people will daven for him. My v'tomei tomei, why did he use the double expression, the Tomei, Tomei Yitra, means Shamat Minatauti. You can learn both things from it. That the Mitzvah has to inform people of Mitzvah, and that you have to mark places of Tumah so people stay away from it. Okay, so that's another way of learning it. So we don't need Yechezkel's Pasuk then about Avona Etzlet Tzion. We have instead the Pasuk from Chumash. And the Gemara brings a bunch of others. Abaya Oma Mehocha. Abaya says there's another source for it in the pasuk. The pasuk says don't put a stumbling block in front of a blind person. And it means, in other words, to make sure that people who are dealing with tumah or taras don't stumble and end up being in this place of tumah. Tosfos explains that it's not that these Amoraim are really arguing. Each one is bringing a pasuk that he thought of that seems to make the most sense to him as a source for this concept. But they're not really arguing. On the other hand, Marashah says that each one of them is using his own pasuk because really each one of the psukim that they're bringing, there is a difficulty with using it. in the case of the pasuk from Yechezkel, not only is the fact that Yechezkel is long after Matan Torah, but more to the point, also Yechezkel is not telling us what you should do right now. In context, the pasuk is talking about after Melchama Magog Ummagog, what's going to happen. So not necessarily would we say, the other Amoraim say, you can't necessarily use that as a basis for saying what you have to do nowadays. So therefore, they're looking for other pasukim. The pasuk, the Tomei Yikra, on the other hand, has the problem that, like we said, you use it for a different Jerusha. So, okay, the Gemara is saying the fact that it says the Tomei means that you can learn both Jerushas from it, but the other Amiroyim don't necessarily agree with that. Rabbi Bohu and Rabbi Uziel can say that, but the other Amiroyim disagree with that. Abaya is learning for Lifnei Iver Lo Yosif and Michshol. On the other hand, Rabbi Papa, for example, doesn't like that because you're not putting a Michshol, you're taking away a Michshol. It's not really the same thing. So therefore, the Papa Omar, the Papa says, you have to refer to a pasuk that says, "V'Omar solu solu panu darach." It's the first pasuk of that Torah of Yom Kippur morning. It's a pasuk from Yeshaya that says you should announce solu solu, make the road smooth, panu darach, clear the road. And so therefore, so you see from that you have to clear a road to make it available for people to be able to go when they're dealing with truma and kodesh. On the other hand, that one is also not so, glatt, because, who says that, Marashah says, who says that talking about, clearing the road of Tumah? After all, you're not clearing the road of anything. It's not in the road over here. You're making a marker by the side of the road where you have the Tumah. So therefore, sort of Huna, Rabbi Yeshua, sort of Chinen Omar, Harimu Michshol Miderech Ami, Rav Chinina says, rather, look at the second half of that pasuk, where it doesn't just mention clearing the derech, which is the road. It can mean, it the pasuk continues, harimu michshol miderech ami, remove stumbling blocks from the way of my people. So then he says that shows more clearly that you have to mark off this truma so people don't stumble on it. But that's not it. Rav Yeshua Breidit of Idiomer, he doesn't like that because, again, it's not really a michshol miderech ami. It's not really in the way of my people, and you're not really removing it anyway. You're only marking it. So therefore, sort of Yeshua Breidit of Idiomer, he goes back to Chumash. You have a pasuk. The pasuk says in this week's parasha, Yisrael tells Moshe, you should tell the people the way in which they should go. Well, then in that case, you're telling people that you should make a simon which way they're allowed to go and which way they're not allowed to go. Mazutra, on the other hand, doesn't like that, says Marasha, because the fact is that we have a different Jerusha from that pasuk. There's a couple of places in Shas where Daushin, that pasuk, the pasuk that we just quoted, that it teaches us a bunch of other things. It teaches us that you have to learn something for Parnassa. It teaches us that you have to learn Torah, which is also the way in which a person should go. It teaches us the importance of Bikur Cholim and Halvoyas HaMes and several other things. So not necessarily is it available to teach us about marking graves. So rather, Mazutra brings a positive from Chumash, the Yizdautim is Bnei Yisrael Mutumatsam. You should separate the Jewish people from their Truma. So there you go. You separate them by marking the place of Truma so that they don't accidentally walk on it. Rav Ashi still doesn't like that either, because that pasuk, the Yizdautim is Bnei Yisrael Mutumatsam, is also used for a different Jerusha. We learn from that the concept of a husband separating from his wife when it comes close to her vest. So Rav Ashi says you can learn it from a pasuk that says you should guard my garden, which means that sumishmeres the mishmarti. When you have something that the Torah tells you to guard, for example, truma that you have to keep tahor, make sure you make a guard for it. To make sure, in other words, that you're marking the places of truma so that people don't become tamei. But Ravina doesn't like that because, again, that pasuk asum mishmeres the mishmarti is used to teach us different dinim about guarding truma. So therefore, Ravina brings the last source for the concept of marking graves. The pasuk says v'som derech, the person who places his way, in other words, that makes a simon which way he should go or not go. Arenu v'yeshal lekim, I will show him that how Hashem saves himself from the Jewish people, meaning, in other words, that he gets a schar from Shemayim. So we see, in other words, that there's an important point to be some derech to mark the areas where you're allowed to go and not. Again, the other Amoraim would disagree with that because the Gemara is now going to bring a different drasha from that pasuk. But that's why we have so many different drashas. So again, according to Tosfos, it's just each Amora chapped on something that he thought of. And according to Marusha, in fact, each one, there's a difficulty in it, which therefore the next Amora brings his own pasuk, which he says doesn't have that difficulty. Okay. So in this connection, the Gemara digresses a minute to tell us a drasha on this pasuk of the Samderach. Amr Bishrub and Levi, Kol Hashom or Chosav, when a person evaluates his ways. In other words, Rashi says that he figures out, it says in Pirkei Avos, Hefsid Mitzvah Keneged Schara, or Schara Veda Keneged Hefseda. So he's about to do, he wants to do a mitzvah. He thinks to himself, yes, doing this mitzvah is going to have such and such difficulties and such costs associated with it. But on the other hand, the schar that I'm going to get for the mitzvah is much greater. Let me go ahead and do the mitzvah. And on the other hand, when he comes to doing an Aveira, he thinks to himself, okay, there is the pleasure that I'll get and the financial benefit and whatever that I'll get from doing this Aveira. But on the other hand, let me consider what the consequences of this Aveira are in Olam Hazeh and in Olam Haba. Therefore, I'm not going to do it. So that's Hashom, Hashom or Chosav, where he's constantly evaluating what he's doing to do the right thing. So such a person, he will have the schus to see when Hashem saves the Jewish people. Which also, means, so to speak, that Hashem saves himself, because as we learned in Megillah, Hashem is with us in all of our goals. So Shanema, the sum derech, as the pasuk says, the sum derech, the person who places himself away, so I'll take this sum, el of a shum derech. Don't read the word as the sum, meaning that he places and that he places his way, like we said before, that a person places a marker to know where to go and where not to go. El v'sham derech, but rather read the word as v'sham with a shin, which is meloshin shuma, meloshin evaluating what he's doing. Am I doing the right thing or not? So then, arenu b'yesh alekim. So the pasuk is saying that I will show him. He'll have the schus to be there when Hashem saves the Jewish people. So the Gemara brings in this connection. Rabbi Yanai Havalayahu Talmidah. Rabbi Yanai had a certain Talmud. Bekol Yoyma Hava Makshilei. Throughout the year, this Talmud would ask him questions in Torah. B'Shabbos the Rigla Loi Hava Makshilei. But on the Shabbos of the during Yom Tov, then he would not ask him. Now, why not? Rashi says, because Rashi and Tosfos say that it's a day when everybody would be gathering to hear a drosha from Rabbi Yanai. During the rest of the year, Rabbi Yanai is teaching his Talmidim, who are the elite Talmid Chachamim, but on the Shabbos, on Shabbos during Yom Tov, Shabbos which is Yom Tov, or Shabbos Chol Hamoed or whatever, instead he would be darshaning for the Hamoin Am and to hear the halachas of the Yom Tov. So this Talmud wouldn't ask him questions at that time. Why not? Rashi says, because the Talmud was concerned, what happens if I ask Rabbi Yanai a question and he doesn't know the answer? He's going to be embarrassed in public. So Kori Alei, so Rabbi Yanai applied to this Talmud, this pasuk that we just said, the Shom Derech Aron B'Yesh Elikim, that he considers and evaluates his ways, and I'll show him the salvation of Hashem. Because in other words, he's doing that. He's considering what's the right time to ask or not to ask. He's considering for himself. This is an example of Hefsit Keneged Schar, the Ritva says. He's considering to himself, on the one hand, if I ask the question, then I could get an answer. But on the other hand, I might embarrass Rabbi Yanai publicly, which would be a terrible thing. On the other hand, if I don't ask the question, it's not so bad. Okay, even if I never find out this answer, it's still not so bad. And certainly there's no reason to think that I'll never find it out. I can always ask. After Shabbos is over. So then, so Rabbi Yanai is praising this Talmud that he's doing the right thing. He's considering his ways and considering Hefsid and considering the Hefsid versus the Schar. Marsha has a whole different explanation. He says what's going on over here is this Talmud would be learning from Rabbi Yanai throughout the year, and he's asking him questions as we do in the Gemara. When it came to the Drosha of Yom Tov, neither of the kinds of questions that you ask during the rest of the year would really be applicable. The kind of questions you would ask during the year are either, this is very poshut, why did you have to say that? Well, when you're teaching the Hamayaretz, you have to say even the things that are poshut. Or you would be saying, what about this thing that you said contradicts this other thing that you said? Well, when he's giving a drosha to the tzibur, he wouldn't be very careful to clarify to begin with how the two different things are reconciled, so everybody knows what the relevant halachas are. So this Talmud, therefore, doesn't really have a need to come to the drosha on Shabbos of Yom Tov at all, because neither of the kinds of kashas that he asks throughout the year are going to be relevant. Nevertheless, he would make sure to come to the drasha, figuring that he could always learn something new over there. And so Rav Yana is praising him that he's doing that, that he's not just saying, well, you know what, I'm only there when we're doing high-level learning. I don't need to be there. When they're learning the simple stuff, he's there for that as well, even though there's no kashas for him to ask. And therefore, that's the kind of person who's v'sham derech haran and v'yeshavakim. That's how Marashar explains it. Getting back now to the matter of marking graves. So now, we're going to have a sugya on the subject of the dinim of what we mark and what we don't mark. We'll start it today, and we'll finish that sugya tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. So, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a b'raisa, Ein mitzaynin, we do not mark with the plaster, loy al kezayis min ames, not when there's only a kezayis of a mess over there, even though that's enough to be mitame, as the Gemara is going to explain soon why we don't. Also not when there's a bone only the size of a grain of barley, even though, again, that's enough to be metame as well. In fact, Tosfos points out, even when it's larger than that, the point is that there's a certain minimum amount that you need in order to be metame ba'oihel. So we're not going to bother marking things that are, the reason why we're not marking a kezias of a mess, the Gemara is going to explain soon, even though it is metame ba'oihel, there's a reason not to. When it comes to etzim and kasoira, or even a piece a little larger than that, it's not going to be matame ba'oihel. It's only going to be matame, a person who touches it or carries it. And therefore, that you don't need to mark, because we're not assuming that a person is going to start picking up the dirt. We're only concerned that the person might overshadow it. So in etzim kasoira, you don't have to worry about that. V'loyal dover she'enu matame ba'oihel. Also, not anything else that's not matame ba'oil, which includes various kinds of things that come from a mess. There are some of them that are matame only b'maga b'masa, but not ba'oil. Tosfos gives an example. One of them is, for example, of the dust that a body decays into is called rokov. And if you have a ladle full of it, a certain size spoon that they had in those days, then it's matame a person, but not ba'oil. So that would be one example. And another example is going to be, the Gemara is going to talk about soon, about a field that you had a grave in it, and then they plowed it over, and now there are bones scattered all over the field. Such things are not matame ba'oil, so therefore you don't mark those. Now, when we say you don't mark them, it means, for one thing, it means that you don't need to mark them. And on Chol HaMoed, you wouldn't be allowed to mark them because it would be a tircha that's not necessary for Yom Tov. So, continues the Braisa. Album with Sinan ala Shedra, but you do mark when you have a place where there's a human where there's a human spine, because that's enough to be matame, ba'oil, ba'ala gugoilas, or when you have a skull, same reason. Al roiv binyan, when you have most of the frame of a person, which is the entire frame of the human body is considered to be it's considered to be basically everything from the neck down to the leg bones. So roiv of that in halacha is considered to be two leg bones and one thigh bone. That's considered to be roiv binyan, and that's enough by itself. Even though you only have those three bones, and it's only three bones out of 248. That's enough to be matame ba'oil. So therefore, if you have an area where such bones are located, then you have to mark it. But roiv minyan, also when you have the majority of the number of bones in the body. You have 248. So, I mean, if you have 125 of them or more, then that's matame ba'oil. Therefore, you have to mark it. So, continues the braisa. Now, you don't have to apply plaster to places where you know that there's graves, because everybody knows that there's graves over there, so nobody's going to be walking over there if they deal with Truma or Taurus. Nobody's going to be carrying Truma or Taurus there anyway. Alva matzainen, alva sfeikis. But what you mark is places where there's a suffix. Where, for example, you have something where there's an oihel that might be over a mess or might not. So therefore, people may not be careful and they may walk over there, and therefore you mark it so they know not to walk there. The Eloheina Sphakis, what do we mean by Sphakis? Schochos. So that means, for example, when you have branches of a tree overshadowing. So Rashi explains that it means, let's say you have, a cemetery, and then you have a tree where part of it overhangs the cemetery and part of it overhangs the street. So now what happens is, so now each branch by itself So each branch by itself, you might, there's not necessarily truma under any individual branch. But Rashi says, because part of it overshadows a cemetery, therefore people might bury under one of the branches, and you don't know which one. And therefore, therefore we have to mark it so that people know not to go under such a tree. So there, in other words, you have different mafarshim talking about different exact other details, but the point is, in other words, that there might be tumma underneath it, or there might not. So that's schachos. And also prois, also when you have stones that stick out of the wall, and let's say you have the wall around a cemetery, and then you have stones that stick out of the wall. So again, sometimes people might bury under one of those stones, and then you're going to pass by there, and you're going to become tummy. So that kind of thing you have to mark. Or beis hapras, and a beis hapras, which the Gemara is going to explain soon what a beis hapras is. And continues the Braisa, the ein ma'amidin siyun b'makom tumah. You don't put the marker of the plaster exactly in the place of tumah. Shalalahafsid, that's a taras, because you don't want to ruin the taras. Because what's going to happen if you don't have the marker a little bit before the place of the tumah? A person is going to be walking along. All of a sudden, he realizes that he's over a place of tumah. All of a sudden, he realizes he's over the plaster, and then at that point, it's too late. The kodshim or the tumah that he was carrying became tumah. Therefore, we want the marker a little bit before the tumah. On the other hand, the in marchikin siyun b'makom ha'tumah. On the other hand, you don't put it too far away from the tumah. Shelo lahafsid es Eretz Yisrael in order not to cause Eretz Yisrael to be lost. In other words, you don't want to take too much area of Eretz Yisrael and declare it a place of tumah where it's unnecessary. So you put the plaster a little bit beyond the place of the tumah, but not too much beyond it. So that's the Braisa. Now let's analyze the Braisa. Why are we saying, we said the first thing was that you don't mark a kazayis min ames. So why not? The kazayis min ames ain't a matame ba'oil. You're telling me that a kazayis of a dead body is not matame ba'oil? Ba'atanya, or it's not really, it's a Mishnah. Elush matamin ba'oil. The following things are matame, a person who overshadows them, or where they're under the same roof as them. And the first one is kazayis min ames. So why shouldn't you mark a kazayis min ames? The answer is, I'm going to pop a hocha b'kazayis mitzumtzum askinim. The case we're talking about over here is where the piece of the mess is exactly a kazayis in size. The soif michsa choser. Soon enough, it's buried in the ground. Soon enough, it's going to start decaying. And you're not going to have a kazayis there anymore. So therefore, some mutav yisofu olav truma v'kodshim l'fishah, it's better that we should be burning truma and kodshim about it as a temporary thing. In other words, for a short time, what's going to happen is, while before it decays, people are going to walk over there, not realize that there's truma, and accidentally their truma is going to become tome, and then they'll realize it afterwards and burn it. But better to do that, bal yisofu olav la'olam, rather than continuing to do so forever. Because the marker is going to last there a lot longer than the kazayis min ames will last. So if you mark it, what's going to happen? Soon enough, the kazayis min ames will be gone. There is, in fact, no truma over there that's going to be matame, the person, or the truma. And then still the marker, the plaster, is going to be there. And people are going to think the area is tame. And then if they accidentally walk over it, then they're going to think that they're tame and that the truma that they touch is tame, etc. So we don't want that. So therefore, it's only a temporary thing that you're going to have the kazayis over there. So therefore, don't bother marking it. If it happens that somebody walks over it, okay, so they'll realize afterwards and they'll burn their truma. In fact, we're showing him explain that what's going to happen is it's when you have a kazayis min ames there, at least for the first little bit, you're going to have a coil. It's going to be well known that there is a mess over there. So people will know to stay away from that. And if accidentally you have somebody walks over it without realizing, then they'll realize soon enough and they'll burn their truma or their kodshim. But better to do that as a temporary thing rather than making a permanent, not really permanent, but whatever, making a long-term marker over there. Now, we said in the Braisa that Elohim has Sfeikus. We said that Sfeikus that you have to mark includes Schochus of those. So what are those? Schochus means Ilan HaMesach HaLa'oret. When you have a tree that's overhanging, the branches hang over the ground. So like we said before, in other words, so you have Tumah under one branch, and you don't know which branch there's Tumah under. So therefore, so you mark the whole tree so that nobody walks under it, so they don't accidentally become Tumah. What a prois means abonim prois hayotis min hageder, means large stones that stick out of the wall, and therefore people might bury underneath them, and so that's the kind of thing that you mark. Okay, what is beis hapras? We said the third kind of thing that you mark is a beis hapras. So what is a Beis HaPras? Kiditzan. We learn in a Mishnah. In Olas. Hachodesh is a kever. If a person plowed over a grave, see how there was a grave in a field. If there was a grave in a field and somebody plowed that field, and Tosfos points out, nowadays we bury Mason fairly deeply, so even if you plow over there, it's very unlikely that he actually got to the caver and did anything with it. But in those times, they used to bury in much shallower quarries, so there was a real possibility when you're plowing that you might end up plowing all the way down to the grave, and then you're going to take bones and scatter them all over the place. So the Mishnah says, Harehu Oisa Beis HaPras. So then, by doing that, by plowing over there, you've created a Beis HaPras. There's a few different explanations of Rishonim why we call the place Beis HaPras. One explanation is that the word pras is related to prusa, which means like a prusa is a piece of bread. So it means broken up, because there are broken up bones all over the place. Another, that's Rashi. The Rambam explains that it comes from the word poras with a sin, meaning spread out, because you have bones spread out and scattered all over the field. And Tosfos and discusses in other places that it comes from the word parsa, which means a foot, because people's feet avoid walking over there with their feet so that they don't become tummy. So now you made the place a base of grass because you plowed over the grave over there. But kamahu oisa, how much area is now considered a base of grass? Maloy mana, the amount, the distance that you would go in one, the distance that you would go in one time with the plow. A mana is a furrow that you make with the plow. The way they used to do it is they're plowing the field. There would be a certain distance that they would go with one drag, like of the plow, before they would stop and change direction or whatever. And what is that amount? Meya amma, 100 ammas. So in other words, in whatever direction you plowed the field, 100 ammas by 100 ammas is now considered a Beis HaPras. So that's a Beis HaPras, and that's what we're saying, that you have to, people have to stay away from there because there may be bones scattered over there, and therefore you mourn. The question is, a Beis HaPras, in the time of the oil. The question is, we said before, the Braisa established the rule that you only mark places that are in the time of the oil. A Beis HaPras is not in the time of the oil. Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel that a person is allowed to walk through a Beis HaPras blowing as he goes along. So we're talking about, let's say a person is on his way to bring his Korban Pesach or to do certain other important mitzvahs. So even though usually we would tell him go around, but in this case, let's say the most direct route involves going through a Beis HaPras, what he can do is he can go slowly and blow as he goes along. What does that accomplish? As he blows, any loose dirt will be moved away by him blowing. And then if there are any bones over there, then he'll notice them and know not to step on them. So now, obviously, that means that the place is not Matam and Ba'oyel. Otherwise, that wouldn't work. And Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ami Mishmeda Ula Amar. Also, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ami says, in the name of Ula, Beis HaPras Shenidash Tahar. A Beis HaPras that was trampled is Tahar. Because once people or animals or whatever trampled it, then any bones that were there have been reduced in size to less than the size of a grain of barley, and less than that if not Matam. So we see, in other words, for both of those dinim, that a Beis HaPras is not metamei ba'oil. Otherwise, those methods wouldn't work. So what are you telling me? So why are we marking a Beis HaPras with plaster if the whole point was we only mark places that are metamei ba'oil? And the answer is, Amar HaPapa, like Kasha, kan v'sodosha ovad ba'kever, kan v'sodosha nechrash ba'kever. There's actually two different cases. When we say that you mark a Beis HaPras, doesn't mean where you plowed it. It means a field in which a kever was lost. So at one point, you know that at one point there was a caver in this field. Now you've lost track of where it is. So now, wherever the caver is, it's going to be Matam and Ba'oil. So therefore, that kind of field, we mark that area with plaster so people know to stay out of it. The other kind of Beis HaPras, the classic Beis HaPras, the kind where they plowed up the over the grave, then you're right, you don't have to mark it because now the bones are scattered all over, and therefore the only problem is that you might touch them or you might carry them. So Gemara says, the Sodesh Nechrash Bakever Beis HaPras Karila. So you're telling me that we go Nechrash Bakever, actually, Hagos Agro changes it to Sha'obad Bakever. You're telling me that a field where you know that there was a grave, but then you lost track of where it is, how is that called a Beis HaPras? Didn't we say a base of pras is where you plow to glaive? And the answer is ain. As a matter of fact, yes. The Hotsnan, and indeed we learn in a Mishnah, also in Olas, Shlosha base of prasin. There are three kinds of areas that are called a base of pras. Sadash and Neva Bakever. Number one, where you lost track of where in the field the grave is. Number two is Sadash and Nechrash Bakever, where you plowed it up and now bones are scattered all over the field. And the third one, Ustay Boichin. And the third one is a field of crying. Actually, Agoris Hagura changes the word Boichin to Kuchin, which means a place, a field, where they have niches in the ground for burying the dead. So my Sdei Boichin, the Gemara says, what's a Sdei Boichin and what's the problem of Tumah over there? So Rabbi Yeshua, Ba'ava, Meshmeida Ulama, Sada Shemachtirin Ba'Mesin. It's a field near a cemetery where they're Machtirin the Mesin. Meaning Rashi described, when they bring Mesin to bury them from someplace else, they stop off in this field near the grave, and then the people who brought the mess from the other city, they leave, and the local people come and take over and do the Tara and bury the mess. So it's like I guess the modern equivalent would be maybe like a funeral home or something, but whatever. Such a field, then we're saying, has the dinim of base of class. So the time am I, why should it? You have the mess over there, fine, but you're taking the mess away from there. On the face of it, nothing is left. So Omer Avimi, Mishum Yush Bailim Naguba. The reason is, the Chachamim gave that the status of a base of class because of Yush Bailim. So what does that mean? So one explanation is, so Rashi explains, since they brought the mess from out of town, it's possible that in the course of bringing it and putting the mess over there for the people, for the local people to come and take over, a piece might have fallen off the mess and nobody realized and it ended up getting buried over there. So now it's very possible that there are actually remains of Mesim buried in this place without people knowing about it. The Rambam has a different explanation of Yush Bailim, because since people regularly use this as a place to go and cry for the mess and then take over for the Levaya or whatever, so therefore the owner of it kind of gives up ever being able to use it, because the Rabbim already are using it, and then, therefore he doesn't really have complete rights to it anymore. Once he was Miyash in it, people may well come and bury over there without his permission, because anyway he was kind of Miyash on it, and therefore there might well be bodies buried over there and you don't know. So therefore, that's why the Chachamim declared a Sdei Boichin to also be a kind of base of pras, and you have to stay out of it because you might become Tomei. So that's the kind of thing we're saying. So a Sodash Ovad Bakever or a Sdei Boichin are the kind that you would mark with plaster. A base of pras, what we usually think of as a base of pras, namely where you plowed up the grave, that we do not mark because it's not necessary. Once it was plowed up, then there's nothing over there between the time and the oil anyway. All you have is bones scattered all over, and bones on and individual bones are not in the time and the oil. Okay, we'll continue this discussion tomorrow, Hashem. Great, everyone.